From SDPB Radio, I'm Josh Heyer, and you're listening to the In the Moment News Podcast. Each week, In the Moment with Lori Walsh brings you news and arts coverage from across the state. Listen live at 11 a.m. Central, 10 Mountain on SDPB Radio, or tell your smart speaker, play SDPB. You can find every In the Moment segment at listen.sdpb.org or subscribe to the In the Moment Segments Podcast. And now, it's your weekly roundup in news coverage. In this In the Moment podcast special, we're going to meet some of the candidates that you may be seeing on your ballot this year. Now, Wayne Steinhauer has been a member of South Dakota Senate since 2019, and his term is up in January. He's running for re-election as a Republican out of District 9, which is Minnehaha County. Let's take a listen.
Wayne Steinhauer, welcome to meet the candidates on In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Tell me a little bit about what some of your main focuses are with your time in the legislature so far, and then we'll talk about what you're hoping to do if voters send you back to Pierre.
Well, I was appointed by Governor Dugard in late 2015 to the House and then ran for the Senate in 18. And during that time, I think reasonable regulations that don't impede business but protect the public are a concern. And it seems like I've been very involved in healthcare issues. Even though I'm not a healthcare professional, I am a consumer, which I think is a good perspective for a policymaker to have. And actually, right after my first year, I was the chair of a summer study looking at nursing home regulations across the state. Continues to be an area of great interest to me, and healthcare and more of a regional approach across the state. I'm on an informal group this summer that's looking at what we can do for long-term services, and I'm also vice chair of a committee this summer on mental health issues in the state.
Let's talk a little bit more about mental health and sort of regional delivery of health care, because we've learned so much through these programs from the South Dakota State Legislature in the past year or so about where those services stand. And now we are in this crisis, this, you know, COVID-19 pandemic, which has an incredible impact on people's ability to seek mental health services and the anxiety and pressure that everyone is under. Tell me first a little bit about how you feel the state legislature was poised, you know, in a positive way because of the work that had already been laid to deal with an incoming crisis that was unexpected.
Well, we have been focusing a great deal the last couple of years. In fact, we're in our third summer of study on issues related to mental health, bringing more mental health telemedicine, which is a very good delivery mechanism for mental health, and looking at what kind of community supports services are available. I was on a committee focusing on that last year, and we're hoping to develop more peer-to-peer type of support for those dealing with mental health issues. In this summer study, the summer is looking at what we can do to put more regional approach to our one state institution is the Human Services Center in Yankton, South Dakota. And unfortunately, we are transporting people long distances, taking them away from their support structure in their community, oftentimes for short stays, doing competency restoration work with them there. And we're going to be investigating the possibility, can we do that from more of a regional approach, keeping them closer to their support mechanisms and hopefully saving costs at the same time?
This might be too early to ask you this question, and if it is, just please say so. But I'm wondering about the possibility of any federal COVID-19 funding, that those dollars from the CARES Act. Are there possibilities for increased mental health services as they relate to the pandemic to be used to shore up a mental health infrastructure, for example?
Well, I wish that there was more flexibility to the use of those funds, but they really are specific to COVID-related expenses. Now, we can use those funds to backfill those expenses and thereby potentially free up some cash that might be able to be used in new programs. But I see probably little opportunity. What I think is really important to maybe to focus on is that the use of telemedicine, which is from a federal standpoint, from CMS, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, are allowing telemedicine. I hope that that remains, because that usually drives a parity in the insurance markets as well, which I think will be great for South Dakotans if some of the regulations that were relaxed at a federal level, if they can remain in place. Telemedicine and is one in particular that I think will help in mental health delivery.
Because so much throughout this
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You were saying that because of the insurance companies, I want you to make that, go ahead and make that clear.
Well, they will oftentimes follow federal regulations. So if the federal government for Medicaid and Medicare are allowing, for example, telemedicine, my understanding is the insurance companies will also follow in that pattern as well.
Yeah, that seems to be my understanding as well. So let's talk a little bit about the pandemic and how things have unfolded across the nation with the federal response, the governor's response, and local control. And you have talked about the importance of local control. So speak on that for a little bit, as you've sort of seen not just this issue of COVID-19, but other issues. Why do you think local control in districts, in municipalities across the state is so important?
Well, I think government is best performed when it's closest to the people. And frankly, I think we need to remember that the building block of society is the family unit. We need to respect the family unit to make the decisions for themselves. But whether it's a school board or a county commission or your local city council, they're the ones that really have a great deal of influence on your lives. And unfortunately, little attention is paid there. And what I want to do when I go to peer is not make the same mistake and be a hypocrite, in that we often like to complain about the federal government with their mandates and strings attached to any funding. We need to make sure that we aren't doing that to our counties and our cities as well. You know, if you look across the state of South Dakota, the variance in, take COVID, for example, different counties have, I think still we have a few counties that haven't had any cases. And I appreciate the fact that the governor has allowed flexibility and the government has provided guidance and education, but she'll still pick up the phone and talk to local officials and encourage them to do what needs to be done to protect the public. And I think that those decisions based locally are the best. What happens in Lyman, South Dakota is going to be way different than happens in Lincoln County, for example.
Yeah. Wayne, you mentioned the strength of families, and I'm wondering if you would leave us with one example of something in peer, some decision that you think was made or could be made that would directly make stronger families in South Dakota. Can you give me just one thing that says this is what it should look like?
Well, it's a great question. It may be one in relationship to education. And there was a bill this year, and it flew through the House, but ran into trouble in the Senate and on the Senate Education Committee. I had concerns as well. And it gets down to what's the start date for a child to start school. Right now, they have to be age 5 by September 1st. And the movement was to push it back to the 1st of August of that month. Difference for some individuals, they might not be mature enough or ready enough for school. And it was, in my opinion, a one-size-fits-all solution. And rather, I'd rather see if the state, in fact, I'm working with the Department of Ed to see if we can't encourage more individual assessments that the parents can understand and be talked with about and counseled with about, so that they can decide whether their child's ready for school. I think that's a little bit more of a personal decision. I don't know that that 1 month would have made that much of a decision. That's just one minor example, Lori. I think when it comes to questions of homeschooling, which is growing tremendously in the state, and making sure that homeschool is on par. There was used to be different requirements in terms of passing college entrance exams, that they had to have a higher level of score if you were homeschooled than if you had gone to public schools. Some of those things, I think, were actually a detriment to family choice of and that very personal decision of educating your kid at home.
Wayne Steinhauer is a Republican running for state Senate re-election, District 9. Senator Steinhauer, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. Have a great day.
Next, we hear from Valerie Parsley. She's a Democrat running for state house and would represent District 8, which consists of Lake, Minor, Moody, and Sanborn counties.
Valerie, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity.
You have a strong education background. Tell us a little bit about your background, and then let's talk about why you want to run for the South Dakota State Legislature now.
Well, I actually started with a very humble country school. I was the only one in my class, but I graduated then from Salem High School. And after that, I went on to SDSU, and I received a double major in German and English with a secondary education endorsement. After that, I went on to USD and received and earned, I should say, a secondary school administration degree. I have been in the field for 34 years. I'm retired now. I loved what I did, and I still have a real passion for education from the littlest all the way through lifelong learning, actually.
So much in education changed over your career, and it seems like in the last year it has changed more quickly than ever before. Do you agree with that, that this is just a cataclysmic change for education as teachers and administrators and parents and students and school employees have had to pivot for this virus?
Well, COVID has changed everything for everyone. It is sad, some of the changes that have had to be made, but we are very fortunate that our schools have tried very hard to be technologically savvy. If we didn't have that, it would be much, much worse. Kudos to administrators and teachers as they try and navigate through this. Teachers, if anything, have had to work twice as hard to create lessons and then to have them work technologically, either through Zoom or whatever method they have chosen to use. But I don't think the passion is lessened when I hear about teachers going from house to house to at least see their students. I'm very touched by that. I don't know what's going to happen in the fall. I know schools are trying to figure out what to do, but as cases crop up, there may have to be a plan B, a plan C. But I have all the faith in the world that our administrators will do what is right for their districts.
Tell me a little bit about why you want to run for State House right now.
I have decided that I would like to fight for education, first and foremost. I do think we need preschool. I have visited with kindergarten teachers in this district to find out what their thoughts are. And students, little ones who have not attended preschool begin about 3 months behind in their learning on average. And while that doesn't seem huge, it is one third of a school year. I also believe that teachers should be paid what they deserve. That half cent sales tax, we need to make sure that that goes where it was intended to go. So, of course, education is a passion of mine, but I have several others also. I'm worried about the closure of nursing homes. In this district, there are 8 nursing homes and assisted living facilities, but Madison lost one. And so I visited with a local administrator, and he shared that he has requests from 20 to 30 potential placements in a month's time, and he could maybe accommodate 3. And he also shared that we definitely could use more assisted living and memory care units. So that is a passion of mine. I am also very concerned about people who are marginalized. I feel that we have a lot of people whose needs are not being met and that we need to be more equitable in our treatment and regardless of ethnicity, gender, or socioeconomic status. I believe that we are a kind state, but I think we can be kinder by being more inclusive in legislation that we create.
I want to go back to your thoughts on nursing homes, because as we all watched over the past 2 years at least, or, you know, in stark relief the past 2 years with the closures and the risk that nursing homes are at, and the funding, you know, formulas that really cannot sustain any kind of longevity or growth. When something has gotten to the point that this issue has gotten, how do you as a lawmaker suggest, you know, making a change? Is it about comprehensive reform? Is it about, you know, a stopgap legislation with a financial boost for, you know, for these nursing homes? Where would you begin as a lawmaker trying to tackle something as broad as the nursing home crisis in South Dakota?
Well, when the reimbursement falls short already, $35 to $40 a day, I know that funding is a real crisis, and I do understand that. Medicaid expansion would certainly be helpful. Having to look at the budget again all the way through, I think, would be very beneficial, and find out where we perhaps have some loopholes that we can fill in.
Tell me a little bit about your personal life now, and what people need to, what voters need to know about you and your family. Sort of what kind of life do you bring with you to Pierre?
Well, my husband and I have three children, and they are all adults now. We have one grandson. We're very involved in our community. We're active in our church. We do Meals on Wheels. I'm a part of a group called MAST, and we do volunteer projects in the community. Right now we're growing a garden so that we can share that with people in the community. We love to travel. We love to volunteer. We like to work with Habitat for Humanity. We have done that both within the state of South Dakota, within this community, within Madison itself, and we have done it outside of the country. And would have done another one this year, except COVID did not allow us to leave the country. So I think we are very community-oriented.
Yeah. Value Parsley is a Democrat. She's running for the State House of Representatives from District 8, and she joined us on the phone today. Valerie, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Next, we hear from Rocky Blair. He is a Republican candidate for District 21, House of Representatives. Blair represented his district as a senator in the last two legislative sessions. District 21 includes Bonhomme, Gregory, Charles Mix, and Tripp counties in South Central South Dakota.
Rocky Blair, welcome to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on, and I thank you guys for hosting us.
Tell us a little bit about District 21, if you would.
District 21 is South Central South Dakota, pretty much all of South Central South Dakota. It involves five counties. We start at the Todd County, Tripp County line, which is about 20 miles west of Winter. I'm employed in Winter and live near Winter. And then it extends all the way east to Springfield. So it includes like Platt, Gregory, Burke, Wagner. It's pretty, mm-hmm. about two and a half hours to drive across the district, but it's very rural. Very progressive, very agriculture-related. Obviously includes a nice portion of the Missouri River. And okay. It's really a pleasure and a great opportunity to be able to represent these people. I'm a fourth generation from here, farmer, rancher, and then also in the insurance business, selling life and health insurance for the last 29 years.
Before we talk about your hopes for an upcoming legislative session, if voters decide to send you to peer, take us back a little bit to the last session and the virus, and all of a sudden there are some pretty intense discussions to have when people don't know, what's coming for the state of South Dakota. How do you think the legislators as a whole really responded to that historic moment?
It's always interesting to be a part of history, but, every day is going to be different from the last. And to see how people come together to at least listen to people that have expertise in different aspects and different issues, but then to deal with the unknown. And that's still something that we're dealing with. When we met that way, we weren't sure. It actually worked out very well. The last on veto day, everybody had an opportunity to speak and actually be heard and vote and see and do it correctly and honestly. And it was really nice to see that happen. LRC, Legislative Research Council, put that all together and with the experts that they need, and they gave us the training. Also, in the meantime, we had a lot of information that was given to us and opportunities. People freely spoke to us about any questions that we had. So that was really interesting, and I think it was just kind of a preview of things to come. And it's not, my wife's a teacher at the high school in Todd County, and their school was out, as most schools were, because of the COVID crisis, and distance learning in a new way for people like me is something new, but it's something that we need to encompass. And even in my industry, the insurance industry, we see it more and more of this happen. So in the long run, it's going to make us better people, but it was very, very challenging. But at the same time, it was a good challenge, and I think we've met it pretty well.
What are some of the top issues that you hope to take to peer to represent the people of your district?
The top issues are, and the Lieutenant Governor is looking into this also, agriculture has suffered with the pricing, and then last year with the floods, and before that with blizzards, and prices have always been a common concern, and how to make sure that our product is being marketed fairly, and also that we have opportunities to do markets from farm or from the individual ranches themselves, opening up those opportunities, being sure that those are there, and then also that the processing process is open for people to take their animals or their product to market and have a good market there. Transportation is a big one. So out here in our rural areas, to make sure that our roads and bridges and infrastructure are adequate and even better than adequate, sufficient so that they can do that without need for unnecessary expenses getting them to market. Also for people, emergency vehicles to get out to rural communities. Health and Human Services has been very open. We need to been talking to the hospitals, long-term care centers, assisted living, the people here in our rural areas to make sure that they're safe, but also have the information. And we do, make sure that regulations aren't so inclusive or obstructive that they can't continue to do what is right and reasonable in the local communities. So just addressing those issues that have been brought up to me, making sure that we have adequate legislation and we just don't go too far with that.
Yeah, talk a little bit about some of the decisions that have been made really at that granular level or at that local level. Decisions in Sioux Falls don't necessarily work for, even when we're talking about reopening schools. What kind of frame of mind do you need to bring to peer to, do the responsible thing and not shirk leadership opportunities, but also to give, local control as much as possible? What are those conversations like?
And I thank you for bringing that up, because that's what we represent here. We realize that we're smaller cities, we're smaller schools, but then we have different focuses as we go into these things. The school district met last night here in Winter, and many of them across the state determining how they're going to go forward. I think that is a local matter because it is different than it happens in the hot spots, which Sioux Falls was for a while, and Huron and Aberdeen. It can pop up anywhere, and so you need to be flexible to move and to adjust to that. Even as these school boards are making their decisions for their local schools, they know this isn't in stone. It could change between now and school starts, but they have made plans and visited with the superintendents and with also our hospital administrators and the people that are at the nursing homes and at the city level, city planning levels, what they're going to do. They appreciate the fact that, yeah, they like the guidance and the information, but they also really appreciate the fact that they can make their own decisions and not be dictated to by a one-size-fits-all, which doesn't in South Dakota. And we've been pretty free to exercise good judgment and good thought processes and flexibility within our communities, and I think that process needs to continue.
Rocky, you mentioned infrastructure and roads and bridges and the challenges of just getting things to market. And I'm wondering if your district and the people that you know really suffered with the during the pandemic with the closure of Smithfield and the challenges we saw with getting animals to slaughter. What needs to happen going forward? Do you have a sense of how do we strengthen that supply chain so something like that doesn't happen again? Do you have ideas?
Well, and like I said, the lieutenant governor right now is addressing some of them so we can process animals and sell them to the consumer, for directly from farm to market type of situations, opening up them. South Dakota's been very good, but we could do a better job of that, particularly if you're going to sell across state lines, addressing those type of issues. People are very innovative. They come up with great ways of making their animal production useful for their communities. They're givers, they're charitable. And as farmers and ranchers, it's always been ways that they've dealt with these struggles in the past so many, many times. And as far as keeping like a Smithfield open or something like that, safety is always going to come first. They understand that. But when you get a backup of cattle or hogs, there needs to be some other place that they can go to. And I think coming up with a clearinghouse or a database or a sharing, and that happens like in the hay industry. If there's a drought, there's a national hotline so that you can find places to market. Those type of things are just some of the ideas, but these guys are so innovative that they'll come up with ways, seeing what's happened, and they will share that with us. And whether it be the South Dakota corn growers or the South Dakota stock growers or what organizations that are there for their members, they'll share that with us, and I'd be happy to and encourage them to bring them to us so that we can delve into that and hopefully bring some of these to fruition to help them and assist them in any way we can.
We've been talking with candidate for House of Representatives for the state of South Dakota, District 21, Rocky Blair. He's a Republican candidate. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
I appreciate you giving me the time. Have a good week.
Now, another Republican running for the South Dakota House of Representatives is Mike Weisgram. This is Weisgram's first attempt at running for a legislative seat. He's a candidate in District 24, which includes Hughes, Hyde, Stanley, and Sully counties. Weisgram lives in Fort Pierre, which he is a member of the city council.
Mike, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to visit with you.
Tell the listeners of South Dakota a little bit about District 24, please.
Well, it's Hyde County, Sully County, Stanley County, and Hughes County. So the notable names would be Highmore, Oneida, Agar, Pierre, and Fort Pierre.
Yeah, it helps people get a little geography in their head as we start to talk.
Yes,
so let's talk, give us a little bit of your background and let me know why now? Why run for the State House at this particular time? What's
sure.
motivating you?
Okay. You're correct. I did operate a business in Pierre for 37 years, not always as the owner, but as an employee and partial owner. that type of thing. But I own the business since 2003. It was a floor covering business. So I did business with really this trade area. I happen to know a lot of folks and, you know, a lot of good customers, and good customers become friends and whatnot. I sold the business in 2015 to two longtime employees, and there happened to be two open seats in this go-around, and it's always interested me. When you live in Pierre and Fort Pierre, the legislature has an effect on the communities for not only the months that they're here, but in preparation and summer meetings and whatnot. And I've always had an inkling to serve there if the opportunity was right. I definitely have had friends that have served in the legislature, obviously with almost 4,000 employees that are in our community, you know, working for state government. It's a big deal, and I'm really energized to have the opportunity to serve.
Yeah. So with your strong business background, what kind of mindset do you think, you know, is useful in public service, in the sense that, you know, hey, I'm a strong candidate because I bring this business background? And then likewise, where do you need to put that business mindset aside and say, this is different than, you know, what might apply to a large scale retail operation?
Yes, sir. Good question. Let me see if I can answer. Well, in general, when you run a business, there's lots of opportunities and challenges and ongoing things that have to be solved, and you need to be innovative in how you change with the consumer. And the consumer has obviously changed, continues to change with all kinds of educational opportunities that the consumer does, and the choices that they're out there. So it's different because it's public policy, it's public funds, and you can't just be so judgmental. You have to take more things into consideration. I should mention I serve on the Fort Pierre City Council as well, so for the last 4 years. And so that's definitely opened my eyes on what a role of a business person can contribute to a public entity. And I think for me, issues such as workforce development is a huge thing. Many of my friends are still in the business community, and it's a big deal. It's a big deal statewide to being able to hire enough competent workers to have your or having enough people to have your business grow and whatnot. Did I talk around it, or did I answer it?
Nope, you did a lot better job answering it than many people. No, I'm just kidding. Let's talk a little bit about workforce development, because that's one of your top issues. Sure. What are some of the opportunities to do that kind of you know, development that leads to growth in South Dakota, not only in the short term but in the long term?
Sure. So how do you get your arms around it? I know Governor Dugard was, you know, very focused on it, and I think Governor Noem has a initiative as well. The pandemic has thrown so many things to the side. You know, housing's a measure or a component of that. I had a nice opportunity yesterday to talk to some of my South Dakota housing friends, and it was enlightening to how many programs that are out there that I knew some of, but not in detail, and those can be some solutions. You know, we have some very innovative people that work for the state of South Dakota. I think we just need to marry them up with people that can, you know, help solve some of the solutions. You know, years ago, when I was a young man. I bought my first home with the help of South Dakota Housing Authority. I think I was elated to get 7.75% on a home loan versus 9.5%. Now, that might date me. Okay, I'll just say I'm 67 years old, so that probably tells you the era of when I was borrowing money. But is there a South Dakota housing program for like program for young entrepreneurs? You know, young entrepreneurs are, you know, that's workforce development as well. So, and I would not put that burden on housing authority, but you know, economic development. I guess I'm full of questions. Maybe have some unusual thoughts about them, but I'd like to shake it up a little bit. There's no issue I'm pounding the table on. I think South Dakota is run very, very well.
One has to wonder, coming out of this pandemic with so many, you know, people who've had to adjust their lives for their families and, you know, for education and, you know, at work, that there won't be a lot of people who aren't looking for innovative ways to go into business for themselves, because I wouldn't be surprised at all. It'd be interesting to have that conversation about how do we encourage that? How do we support that? And make this a time of growth and reevaluation instead of just a time of waiting to get back to normal.
The pandemic is going to shuffle the deck. I think that's very obvious. You know, in the years that I was fortunate enough to be in business, one interesting thing was always apparent to me, that whether it was a stock market correction or the Gulf War, the attack on the on New York and the World Trade Center, I mean, it always stuttered some things. But the consumer always came back, and I think there's such a strong drive to better yourself, whether it's, you know, in home furnishings or buying a different vehicle or whatever the case may be. So I have a lot of experience seeing how the consumer will lead us out of this stuttering portion of the pandemic, and I think that entrepreneurship will, the opportunities will be there. How do you prime it, Phil? That's, I guess that's a question that I would like to pursue a little bit more. And is there something legislatively that can be done to support that?
Mike Weiss-Grimm, is a Republican from Fort Pierre, running for a seat in the State House of Representatives in District 24. Thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Doug Barthel is a former police chief from the Sioux Falls Police Department and is now a community relations specialist with Sanford Health. He's also a candidate for South Dakota's House of Representatives, District 10, which includes Minnehaha County.
Hey, Doug, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, Lori. It's hard to believe 2 years has gone by already, but here we are.
Now, refresh my memory. Were you originally appointed by Governor Dugard? Is that how you ended up in the State House in the first place?
That's correct. That was just about 3 years ago when Governor Dugard appointed me to fill out the remainder of Don Hager's seat in District 10, and so then I ran for election after that, and so just wrapping up my third year, and so kind of run for re-election again in November. So if the voters will have me, I'll hopefully serve another 2 years.
Tell me what, from a District 10 perspective and from your perspective, you see some of the top issues are for an upcoming legislative session.
Well, you know, I don't come with a huge list of, you know, issues and concerns. I think probably our biggest challenge is going to be the economy and just getting through the whole virus situation and getting things back to normal. I think South Dakota is very fortunate where we aren't seeing some of the issues there around the country, but, you know, it always seems like money is a big topic, in at least in the three sessions that I've served, and I've always said it'd be a lot more fun if we had more money to go around. But so just trying to prioritize the different needs and wants and, you know, balance that with, you know, we don't want to raise taxes and create a big burden for people, especially coming out of the situation that we're in right now.
Yeah. Let's talk about House Bill 1169, which was something that you were in support of. About, you sponsored this bill in 2018. It didn't make it out of the Senate, and now it has passed and become law, and this is the ban on the use of cell phones and electronic devices while you're driving. We've spoken about the details of that law on this program before, but could you, there's a lot of emotional testimony went into that, and you heard a lot of stories. Now that that is law, talk a little bit about what it is like as a state lawmaker to take an issue that is so, you know, that affects people's lives so drastically and see it through to this this part of the conclusion where it becomes the law of the land.
Well, first off, when I brought the bill a little over a year ago, it takes a lot of work, as you know, to get a bill through the entire process and get it to the governor's desk and get it to become law. And we actually we passed the House, came within one vote in the Senate, and unfortunately it failed. But so I don't like to bring things back year after year, and so I had pretty well committed that I was going to put it aside for a while. Until last summer, I received a phone call from a gentleman from northeast part of the state, Jeff Dahl, who lost his son in an accident due to distracted driving, and they actually found that he was taking pictures with his cell phone just prior to running into the back end of a grain truck. He didn't even hit the brakes, so he was killed instantly. So after hearing his story and then just listening to him, and I told him, okay, if we're going to do this again, I need you to come out to appear with, you know, maybe with your wife and tell your story, because legislators need to hear it firsthand. And so he was more than willing to do that. They both, Jeff and Lisa, made a couple of trips out to Pierre, had some very impactful and emotional testimony, which certainly had an impact on the other legislators, and also got some great support from other groups and organizations around the state, and kind of got them behind this thing. And so we started quickly gaining some momentum, and fortunately we're able to get it passed through both the House and the Senate and got the governor's signature. And one thing, you know, and I didn't go into it thinking, you know, okay, we want to pass this law so we can write a bunch of tickets and be a heavy-handed enforcement thing, because I'll be the first to admit it's a tough one to enforce, but we're just kind of, a lot of it is just self-awareness, getting people to, you know, comply on their own. And one concession that we did make was the ability for people to make a phone call. I think we're in a rural state, and people just aren't quite ready to give up that ability to hold the phone up to their ear and make a phone call. So this law does not prohibit that. You're still able to do that. You just can't surf the internet, do social media, texting, those sort of things. So, I don't anticipate it's going to be, you know, have a huge impact in the number of citations written, but hopefully it will impact people's behavior and make them think about it before they grab a hold of that device while they're driving, and maybe we can save some injuries and maybe even a few deaths too. So, I mean, I'll be the first to admit that I certainly think about it a lot more, especially since I was the one that was bringing the bill. I thought I better not be the guy that's got his phone in his hand. So, I think it's had a good impact, and like I said, hopefully it'll be positive as we go forward.
Do you anticipate, as you have watched, and I'm asking you this, you know, not only as a former law enforcement officer, but as someone who has served on the Judiciary Committee, do you anticipate a request for any kind of law enforcement reform at the state level? What sort of influence, you know, would it be an influence in training in Pierre? What what kind of oversight does the state legislature have for policing or policing reform? And do you anticipate anybody asking for anything specific?
Oh, I'm guessing that we'll probably see something along those lines. Fortunately, I don't think it's broke here in our state. Now, that being said, I'm certainly open to, some changes, or if there's ways where we can improve things, certainly we can do that. But when I was chief, I served for a number of years on the state's Law Enforcement Standards and Training Commission, and they're basically kind of the oversight group of certification and law enforcement officers in our state, and I think they do a great job, or they did and still do. And so personally, I'd like to see if there's a lot of these changes needed, that they take place via that avenue. Now, again, there may be some things that we need to legislate, but frankly, I'd rather have the experts that are involved in that process make some of those decisions rather than part-time lawmakers. So, like I said, it's not broken. I'm not hearing a lot of concern. Matter of fact, I hear quite the opposite. A lot of people are expressing their support for law enforcement and what they do. And it's kind of a thankless job, and it's becoming harder and harder to even recruit people that would want to do that job. You know, you look at some of the things that are happening around the country, and people think, "Geez, why would I sign up for that?" So. Yeah.
Have you been supportive of calls to classify violence against law enforcement officers as hate crimes? Do you think there's potential there? Or do you think that's going too far?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we're quite to that level yet, but, certainly something that we need to take into consideration. But I don't know if we're quite at that point.
Doug Barthel is running for re-election. He's a Republican from District... I lost it.
Ten.
Sorry, Doug. Dan, thank you. thanks so much for joining us here today. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Jessica Myers has always had an interest in state government. She'd like to put that interest to the test by earning your vote for state senate. She's a Democrat running for office out of District 12, which includes parts of Lake and Minnehaha counties. Enjoy.
Welcome. Thanks for being here, Jessica.
Thanks, Lori, for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your background, and let's get into why you want to run for to represent your district in the South Dakota State Legislature.
Sure. So I have been born and raised in South Dakota. My childhood was West River in Winter, graduated in Vermilion, went to school in King, went away for a couple of years with my husband, and now we've been back in Sioux Falls for about 10 years. And, just with how South Dakota has been, I mean, almost my entire life living here, I just knew that it was time for me to formalize my activity in the state and really representing my wonderful district of District 12 right in the middle of Sioux Falls in Pierre.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about some of the issues that you're either, you're hearing from people in the district that is important to them or that are important to you, issues that you think are top of mind.
So first and foremost, I have three major topics that I really want to have some discussions on in Pierre. The first one is having consistent and better funded education system for the entire state. I am married to a school counselor and know firsthand what it feels like to have a educator income in my family, and to see how the cost of living wage is actually making their paychecks go down each month because of the cost of health care, we need to really dig in and have those conversations about how we're going to educate these teachers, or how we're going to pay our teachers with all of the education concerns that we have throughout the state. Not concerns meaning not that they're bad teachers, but through COVID, it's really showing what our educators are willing to do. They on a dime flip from teaching in person to going remote and having that fourth quarter of school be all virtual, which has just been incredible to see. We have 3 kids in the school district in Sioux Falls, in the public school systems. To see that to happen so was incredible. The second thing that I am passionate about is creating the opportunities for more jobs in the middle of the state. We see so many of our college grads and our working professionals graduate from our amazing university system, and then they are forced to either not be able to go back to their hometown because there's not opportunities, or they head to the sides of the state, either to Rapid or Sioux Falls, when their minds and their work could be so much better suited in the middle of the state. So I want to be able to create opportunities with the state and local governments to be able to find those job opportunities for not only college grads, but for our working spouses of perhaps they live on a farm and their spouse wants to work and stay home, and there's just not opportunities for them. The third is equity. We need to stop all of these bills that are attempted to be passed in South Dakota that are anti-trans, anti-LGBT. That is such a social issue I'm passionate about. I'm the board chair of the Transformation Project in South Dakota. It's a trans youth advocacy group. And to see HB 1057 attempted to be passed last year is so detrimental to the business of South Dakota, because no major company is going to invest in a workforce in a state that tries to pass those things. And I know without a doubt that is not something that's coming from inside South Dakota. That's an out-of-state special interest trying to set a precedent in South Dakota. And as South Dakotans, we're better than that. So those are the three major topics that I am passionate about, and that's why I'm running for District 12 Senate.
On that third topic, do you think the importance lies in sending someone to peer from your district who voters know is not going to be supportive of those things, going to continually vote no on those things? Or do you think that there are opportunities to build coalitions if and when you get to peer, to redirect some of the energy that's going towards those issues into something that is more focused on workforce development or economic development? Or do you think that, how do you sort of envision that working? Because those topics come up every year and the people who bring them are passionate about them.
Sure, they are absolutely passionate about it. And I will say that what is happening is that there is just as much passion on the other side of that topic. They're just not in a position to have their voice listened to. And here's what I absolutely know about South Dakotans. We're hardworking. We're good people. We care about our neighbors. I have never once heard people so passionate about something that is so divisive in the state. There's no reason why those need to even be brought up. That, like I said before, this is out of state special interest groups trying to use South Dakota, our wonderful state, to use it because it is so heavy Republican, to set that precedent to change it throughout the country. Those are just straight up hate bills. We need to spend our time as a state legislature on things that are going to create a future for our kids, to make us competitive in the new world. There's no way that by passing those things, that's going to move us forward. It's wasting our time as a state government, and we have bigger issues. We have to worry about the drug issues that are happening in smaller towns, the lack of job opportunities. Without jobs, we don't have tax, we don't have the ability to save bridges and roads. We need to be able to keep our teachers. We have to be able to have state and local police be funded as well. So focusing on all of these social issues is not the priority. We've got bigger fish to fry, and it's not through that.
I want to ask you in our remaining minute, as someone who has left the state and come back, what brings you back home? Because I know we've heard Governor Kristi Noem and, you know, many people from the South Dakota State Legislature really working on inviting people to come live here, inviting, you know, South Dakotans to the economic development, you know, targeting South Dakotans directly who have left home and saying now is the time to come back. What brought you back home?
What brought us back is the people. It's the opportunity to be able to have our kids in, we just finished elementary school, so we have two daughters in high school and one entering middle school this fall. And our kids were able to have a playground. We have a yard. We have space. We have play dates with our kids. And it was by no sacrifice to us to come back. My husband took a 60% pay cut to move back. But we knew that what we could create and how we could impact the state going forward would be better in South Dakota than anywhere else that we live. We chose to come back. We chose to make a difference in South Dakota. And I know that by having my voice in peer, by being able to have those tough conversations with people that may not agree with everything that I believe in, I know we can make South Dakota better by doing something like that.
Jessica Myers is a Democrat. She's running for office from District 12, and she's joining us as part of our Meet the Candidates series. She's running for State Senate, by the way. Jessica, thanks for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Marie.
Now, if you want to hear more of our Meet the Candidates series, you can listen to the previous news podcast from last week, and be sure to stay tuned to In the Moment Live on SDPB Radio, where you'll be hearing these interviews throughout the weeks ahead.
Now that's the show for this week. Thank you for joining us. Again, if you're looking for an individual segment from our radio program, you can find all of our segments at listen.sdpb.org or by following the In the Moment Segments podcast. And if you have a story idea, send an email to inthemoment@sdpb.org. For Lori Walsh and Chris Loffrey, I'm Josh Heyer. Thank you for listening.